So I can see who's here. There you all are. Hello, everyone. Good evening. Good to see you after our little sabbatical. Hey, Michael, could you turn the ceiling lamp light off again? It's kind of, thank you. Yeah, that's good. So we're back, sitting with you in the Zoom Zendo, even though we never really went anywhere and we were sitting here sometimes anyway, but we didn't turn the Zoom on. And we just had a month of slowing down, doing a lot of walking outdoors. Exploring some trails right here on Blue Mountain that we didn't know about. But as some of you know, and some of you were here, we had a beautiful Jukai ceremony, receiving the Bodhisattva precepts, and 9 people received the Bodhisattva precepts on Sunday out in the garden, in the backyard. And hopefully we'll some of you were there live, and some of you were there on Zoom, and it was really, really wonderful. Also, you know, to sit with actual people in the Zendo as well. So hopefully we can post some photos of that occasion on the website. The very next day, on Monday, was International Overdose Awareness Day. And thanks to Harkmal for reminding us of that. And last year, either on that day or very close to that day, we sat together and we did a reading and a talking circle, and I forget, maybe we did a chant to recognize the depth of the tragedy and crisis of opioid overdose in our communities. And little did we know, how could we have imagined a year later that the situation would be even more dire due to the COVID pandemic, and that those living on the margins of our society, many different ways that people live on the margins of our society and have been made even more vulnerable due to the conditions of the pandemic. And among those are those who have suffered from the opioid crisis. And as you, I think, know, the numbers have been, this past summer, worse than ever. The loss is worse than ever. I don't trust my memory for figures, but I believe it's something like over 170 per month right here in our. Yeah, I don't, I'm bad at statistics. I don't retain statistics, but it's worse than ever. Did anyone cross the Broward Bridge on Monday and see the pairs of shoes that were hung along the bridge in memory of each person who had died of overdose in the recent months? And each pair of shoes had a little sign that said the person's name and something like some mother's son or some mother's daughter, a phrase like that for each person. So I'd like to invite us just to sit quietly for just a few moments and bring into our hearts those who have died. And while we're doing this, I'll ring a bell to start. And if anyone knows individuals who have died, and it doesn't have to be recently, from in the opioid crisis, please just say their names, and you know, first name is fine. Just unmute yourself and speak their name. And then after a little bit, I'll extend that to include their loved ones and others affected. So let's just sit for a few minutes with all those who have been affected by this particular human suffering in our hearts. Hold them in our hearts with compassion. Now let's open our hearts also to include the families, friends, loved ones of any, of all those who have died of overdose. And also extending our care and compassion to those who work on the front lines, first responders, who've done their utmost to support and keep safe those at risk, and who have known the heartbreak of being unable to do so. And then touching in to that place in each of us, that hungry ghost that craves and reaches for distraction, reaches for relief. Giving care and kindness to that place in ourselves. Thank you, everyone. The reading I'd like to introduce tonight and probably follow up in the next couple of weeks is from an American teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, a woman teacher named Tsutrim Alioni. And she's been teaching for decades and very well regarded. And this is from a kind of summarized version of her book called Feeding Your Demons, Ancient Wisdom for Resolving Inner Conflict. There's her book. But it's a kind of a Reader's Digest version in a Tricycle magazine collection of articles on addiction. And the reason I chose this is because, you know, our culture has been called a culture of addiction, a culture of craving, a culture of always wanting more. And so it's really important that we not think of those, you know, who suffer most from addiction as those people. You know, those people over there, you know, not ourselves, other than ourselves. It's really important for us to cultivate a deep understanding of the roots of craving. And this concept or practice that Tsutrim Alioni introduces called feeding your demons might seem really counterintuitive. What, you know, who wants to nourish their demons, right? We want to expel our demons, right? Exercise them. That's the traditional way of thinking about demons. But this is different. And I think this approach is really congruent with our practice. It's a way of transforming our demons into allies, because they're not so far apart as we think. It's work that I have done, or practice that Michael and I learned under a different name, called inner critic, working with the inner critic, right? That harsh, judgmental, mean inner critic, those lacerating voices that we internalize. And those are, inner critic work is something that we learned at Great Vow Monastery when we were practicing there. And it's more from a psychological tradition. But it's very, very close, really, to this work with this practice of working with our demons that Tsutrim Alioni teaches. So I'm just going to read you her introduction. And then maybe next week we can look at more detail of how to do this practice. So here's what she has to say. Demons are not bloodthirsty ghouls waiting for us in dark places. They are within us, the forces that we find inside ourselves, the core of which is ego clinging. Demons are our obsessions and fears, feelings of insecurity, chronic illnesses, or common problems like depression, anxiety, and addiction. Feeding our demons rather than fighting them may seem to contradict the conventional approach of attacking and attempting to eliminate that which assails us. But it turns out to be a remarkable alternative and an effective path to liberation from all dichotomies. In my own process of learning and applying the practice of Chod, which was originated by the 11th century Tibetan yogini. Yogini is the female of yogi. The yogini Machig Lapdron. I realized that demons, or maras, as they are called in Buddhism, are not exotic beings like those seen in Asian scroll paintings. They are our present fears and obsessions, the issues and emotional reactivity of our own lives. Our demons, all stemming from the root demon of ego clinging, but manifesting in an infinite variety of ways, might come from the conflict we have with our lover, the anxiety we feel when we fly, that would be in airplanes, or the discomfort we feel when we look at ourselves in the mirror. We might have a demon that makes us fear abandonment, or a demon that causes us to hurt the ones we love. So we each have our very personalized set of demons. Demons, she continues, demons are ultimately generated by the mind, and as such have no independent existence. Nonetheless, we engage with them as though they were real, and we believe in their existence. Ask anyone who has fought an addiction or anxiety attacks. Demons show up in our lives whether we provoke them or not, whether we want them or not. Even common parlance refers to demons, such as a veteran who has come home battling his demons. Right? We use these phrases. His demons of post-traumatic stress from the war in Iraq. I recently heard a woman say she was fighting her jealousy demon. Unfortunately, the habit of fighting our demons only gives them strength. I mean, you've noticed that just in sitting in zazen. You know, if you start battling your, you know, some demon or other, it just increases its resistance. By feeding, not fighting our demons, we are integrating these energies rather than rejecting them and attempting to distance ourselves from disowned parts of ourselves or projecting them onto others. So feeding, what are we feeding them? We'll talk more about that next week, but I just want to read you her story of the origin of this practice with that from that yogini, that 12th century yogini. Here's the story. The great Tibetan yogini Machig Labdron, who lived from 1055 to 1145, received empowerment from her teacher, Kyoton Sonam Lama, with several other women practitioners. At the key moment when the wisdom beings descended, Machig magically rose up from where she was sitting, passed through the wall of the temple, and flew into a tree above a pond. This pond was the residence of a powerful naga, or water spirit. If you've ever been to Southeast Asia, you'll see images of nagas in Thailand, Burma. They look like dragons, but they don't have feet. They're more like dragon snakes. These capricious beings can cause disruption and disease, but can also act as treasure holders or protectors. Certainly in Japan, you see images of dragons with looks like a pearl in their mouth, you know, a Dharma jewel in their mouths. This particular naga was so terrifying that the local people did not even dare to look at the pond, never mind approach it. But Machig landed in the tree above the pond and stayed there in a state of profound, unshakable meditation. Young Machig's arrival in this lone tree above the pond was a direct confrontation for the water spirit. He approached her threateningly, but she remained in meditation, unafraid. This infuriated him, so he gathered a huge array of nagas from the region in an attempt to intimidate her. They approached her as a mass of terrifying magical apparitions. When she saw them coming, Machig instantly transformed her body into a food offering. And as her biography states, they could not devour her because she was egoless. Not only did the aggression of the nagas evaporate, but also they developed faith in her and offered her their life essence, committing not to harm other beings and vowing to protect her. By meeting the demons without fear, compassionately offering her body as food rather than fighting against them, Machig turned the demons into allies. Well, that's all very fantastic and wonderful. But how do we offer nourishment to our demons? How do we befriend our demons? How do we turn and face our demons? And how do we receive their gifts? Because ultimately their agenda is often actually to protect us, but they do it in ways that no longer serve us. When we did this, the inner critic work, Great Vow, a wonderful, really helpful understanding of how the inner critic forms is that when we are vulnerable in some way, when we're very young and we are under threat, we're criticized, we're hurt, we're harmed, and particularly by those who should be protecting us, that's devastating. So our little self-structure, our child self-structure says, okay, if I can preempt this harm coming from outside by getting myself to do things right, to behave in a way that will preempt that, then I'll be protected from that devastating kind of, you know, betrayal. So we develop these rules, these inner critics who try and get us to behave so as to avoid punishment, criticism, etc. And to an extent that functions, but it doesn't function so well when we reach adulthood and we see a threat where there is no threat, or we see through the distorted view of that inner critic and we, you know, manipulate and browbeat ourselves endlessly. So the knack of these practices with the inner critic or the demons is to befriend them, to actually befriend them, to treat them with respect, respect and firmness, and kind of firmness and clarity. So this is something maybe we can look at and how she, how Tsultrim Alioni does this practice. There are five steps to it. Find the demon, personify the demon and ask what it needs. Become the demon and feed the demon and meet the ally. So stay tuned. We'll explore this a little further next week. It might sound far-fetched, but once you get acquainted with your demon, a demon or two, it's quite remarkable how this process can work. So, I'm thinking we don't, because we did the Fusatsu ceremony, that we don't have time to do small groups tonight, but we will next week and the week after. And we'll look a little more at this material. And then after that, we will begin our practice period. So stay tuned for more information about how we will be launching both simultaneous in person at the Wall Street Zendo and Zoom practice.